Here, present, you are welcome. Other members from other of institutions, I know sometimes we used to be joined by communication, PMGs and whatever, whoever is present, but we'll know each other when we introduce ourselves. But before we introduce ourselves, I would want to request Honorable Kunda just to lead us in a few seconds for prayer on Madira's illness, just also as a committee.
Can we just pray together? Father, we come to the throne of mercy and grace in this morning hours, thinking of your child, Lord, thinking of one of your servants. And Father, we bring Matila before you. You said in your word, you are the Lord God that healed. Will you heal him, Lord? You said you send your word to heal our diseases. Will you touch him this morning and his family? Strengthen them in the name of Jesus for thanksgiving. Amen.
Thank you very much. My name is Matunga Frimukobi, the Chairperson of Cooperative Governance, Traditional Affairs and Administration. I would request other members just to introduce themselves, in fact, everyone, so that we know who's speaking. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Dennis Joseph, member of COPTA Committee.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm John Gunda. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning. I'm Boni Selenese, a member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Thabo Mokoni from the Sunday Times.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Rich De Almeida from PMG.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Andres Segeto from the Office of the Auditor General, and I'm the Senior Manager responsible for the COPTA National Audit.
Good morning. I'm Alice Steen from De Burger.
Good morning. My name is Dovan Mampison. I'm from the Public Service Commission. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Richard Levine from the Public Service Commission. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Selina Sitanenkosi, a Commissioner, Public Service Commission.
Good morning, Members. My name is Mike Silvani. I'm the Commissioner of the Public Service Commission.
Morning, Chair. Honorable Members, the name is Justice Quaid from the PSC.
Good morning, I'm Liesl Steenkam from Rapport.
Good morning, my name is Themba Gupula, Media Officer for this committee.
Good morning, my name is Desmond Koba. I'm from Public Service Commission. Thank you.
Good morning, Members. My name is Nozipiwa Gwaza. I'm the Parliamentary Officer for the Public Service Commission.
Good morning. My name is Moss Manela, the Committee Secretary.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Mosan Mfuku. I'm the Content Advisor for the Committee.
Good morning. My name is Langa Mahlangeni, Research on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Parliament.
Thank you very much and welcome, Honorable Bloemfontein. There is Bloem. So we can start, ignore those time, 11 to half past 11, just ignore them, just make a presentation and we'll be buried without following the times. Who's giving us the presentation?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. May I first extend the Chair's apology, Mr. PM Tem, the Chairperson of the Public Service Commission, who is unable to come today because of other prior engagement in Parliament also. We are the Public Service Commission, a Chapter 10 institution in the Commission, where one of our mandates is, amongst others, to investigate, monitor, and evaluate the organization and administration and the personal practices of the Public Service Commission. From time to time, we get additional responsibilities from the Cabinet, just like managing the National Anti-Corruption Hotline and also managing the financial disclosure framework. We want to thank the committee and appreciate that we have been invited today, hoping that it's not for the first, it will not be the first and last. We are still going to be invited to engage with the committee on matters that has to do with administration. I'm going to hand over to our deputy, our DG, Director General, Professor Levin, to make the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Committee, Honourable Members, Commissioners, colleagues. What we seek to do in this presentation is to firstly give a background as to how the Public Service Commission got involved in the financial disclosure framework process, which Commissioner Nkosi has already referred to. And we want to clarify that role so that the committee members are able to understand that. And then we want to move into the core substance that we were asked to present to the committee, which relates to compliance with the framework, and then very specifically compliance by directors general and heads of department. We'll explain exactly what compliance means. And in that context, we'll introduce the whole concept of scrutiny of the financial disclosures, which increasingly the Public Service Commission is involved in. We would also like to refer briefly to some of the comparative work that we've undertaken, which is obviously of use in terms of strengthening the framework going forward. And then we want to refer to the focus of the National Development Plan and its emphasis on professionalizing the public service, which we believe is very much related as well to the whole question of financial disclosures. And we want to refer to recommendations that we've made to the National Assembly as well as to Cabinet and how these have been taken up in order to strengthen the whole system of financial disclosures and the framework. Commissioner Nkosi has already explained that the Public Service Commission is established in terms of the Constitution, Chapter 10. It promotes and maintains effective and efficient public administration with a high standard of professional ethics. Those bars on the right-hand side refer to the values and principles of public administration, which are applicable across the spheres of government in terms of the Constitution and to all organs of state and all public entities. And obviously, professional ethics is the core one which we are dealing with in today's presentation. The Commission does investigate, monitor, evaluate, and advise on strategic public service issues. And the presentation gives a brief overview of the management of the financial disclosure framework in the public service and provides information on compliance by heads of department, as we were asked to do. In 1999, there was a national anti-corruption conference and a national anti-corruption program was adopted. It was held in Parliament. The Public Service Commission played a very central role in this. And one of the key aspects which emerged in that National Anti-Corruption Conference was the importance of managing potential conflicts of interest of public servants. And it's in that light that a framework was developed. And the Minister of Public Service and Administration in March 2000 approved that the framework be incorporated as Chapter 3 of the Public Service Regulations. And the Public Service Commission has played a central role in the administration and deepening of this framework. All members of the senior management service are required to disclose to their respective executive authorities, ministers, MECs, particulars of their registrable interests not later than 30th of April every year. And the regulations further require that EAs submit copy of the forms on which the designated employees disclose their financial interests to the Public Service Commission no later than the 31st of May each year. Now that's the basic compliance which we look at and which we will give you statistics around. The basic compliance is filling the form, submitting it to the minister or the MEC, and then the minister or MEC submitting it to the Public Service Commission by the 31st of May of each year. The framework explains the role of the Public Service Commission in the management of conflicts of interest, and since 2000, the Public Service Commission has managed the framework. In our initial years of managing the framework, our focus was very much on compliance with the requirements to submit the financial disclosure forms. That was the key focus. But since 2006, the Public Service Commission has expanded its focus to include scrutiny of disclosures to identify potential and actual conflicts of interest and to advise executive authorities accordingly. So originally, we were just focusing on whether the forms were filled and submitted, but increasingly we want to look inside those forms to look for a deeper compliance, if one might put it that way. Is there full disclosure, for example? Is the disclosure honest? Are there potential conflicts of interest? What are the different business activities that public servants are engaging themselves in? Are they engaging in one activity in terms of registrable interests, or they're engaging in a variety of interests? And we also look at the issue of property ownership, as we will explain. Now, currently, we are beginning, or we have begun, to scrutinize 100% of the financial disclosure forms. So in terms of the latest information, we are busy with the full scrutiny of all the financial disclosure forms. But we do have information on the 2010-11 financial year, which we will share with the committee based on the 30% sampling that we did prior to the current period. So for the 11-12 financial year, the forms that were submitted, we are busy doing 100% scrutiny, each and every form. But based on the sampling which we've done in the previous year, we will share that information with the committee. It gives a good sense of where the problems are, but obviously going forward, once we've completed 100% scrutiny, we will have more comprehensive information that we would be able to share with Parliament and the provincial legislatures as well. Now moving on to the basic compliance rate, that is the submission of the financial disclosure form to the executive authority and the executive authority then submitting it to the Public Service Commission. We have a trend analysis here, and what the trend shows is that there is an improvement with the basic compliance. So if we look at 2007-08, moving to 2011-12, we see that the compliance rate has improved. and that is obviously positive. But we would also feel that this basic compliance of simply filling the forms and submitting them should really be at 100%. We should really get to 100%, because it's just about filling a form and submitting it on time. So we would like to suggest that only 100% compliance is acceptable for this very basic level of filling forms and submitting them. Now, if we break it down for the 2011-12 financial year, which is the latest available information on the basic compliance that we have, we see that we're talking about just over 9,000 public servants countrywide. That's at the senior management service level. And 5,206 of them are at the national level, and 3,872 are at the provincial level. And the interesting thing is, although there's a general perception that national departments perform better than provincial departments in a number of different ways, when we look to the compliance rate provincial departments versus national departments, provincial departments have excelled in comparison with national departments. Northern Cape, Western Cape, and Gauteng, in fact, have basically complied. Obviously, there were some cases in Gauteng where there wasn't compliance, which brought it down to 99%. But basically, we can say those three provinces have excelled and complied. But there, again, there is good performance in other provinces as well, including in Mpumalanga and Limpopo. Even in KwaZulu-Natal, the problems were really in one department, which was the Department of Health, which lowered the overall provincial compliance rate. It is a big department. I think the basic issue here is that there are a number of provinces that have complied and are taking financial disclosures very seriously. We would like to see a vast improvement in national compliance rates. And of course, if one breaks it down into individual departments, there are many departments at national level that are 100% compliant. There are many of them that are 100% compliant. But then there are obviously those that aren't, which bring down the overall average of national compliance to 67%. Obviously, what we saw in the trend analysis is that there is an improvement over the years from 2007-08 to 2011-12, and that is to be encouraged. And there is also an improvement if we look back in terms of the compliance between 2010-11 and 2011-12. There is an improvement. It is important to note that there are some departments at national and provincial level that did not submit a single financial disclosure form to the PSC by the due date of the 31st of May 2012, and that is obviously an issue of grave concern. And actually, if one breaks that down, we're talking about 17 national departments and 14 provincial departments. And those 14 provincial departments come from three provinces that did not submit financial disclosure forms by the due date. Actually, the Northwest Province did not submit any disclosure forms by the due date. Now, basically, what we do is we do respond based on the disclosures we look at them and we write to executive authorities, ministers and MECs, and we advise them to take disciplinary action against members of the senior management service who default in terms of the disciplinary code and procedures as contained in the SMS handbook. We believe that it is grounds for disciplinary action to be taken, and we advise accordingly. Now, one of the issues is, can we improve the overall management of the forms, and can we improve the scrutiny process? And what we have been piloting in the current period, and we look to rolling out in the future, is electronic submission of disclosure forms. Because we believe if we can receive the forms electronically, it will speed up processes, and it will also enable us to scrutinize these forms more comprehensively and more efficiently and effectively. Now let's look at the issue of directors general and heads of department. By the due date of 31st of May 2012, the financial disclosure forms of 37% of DGs were outstanding. In three of the cases, the DGs were either placed on special leave or suspended. It is ultimately the responsibility of executive authorities to ensure that officials submit their final financial disclosure forms. But the non-submission and late submission of disclosure forms by DGs and heads of departments is a cause for concern. And that is because accounting officers, heads of department, DGs should be really setting the example and the standard. And if the example is shining at the top, then surely that will encourage other members of the senior management service to follow suit. It is ultimately about transparency, it's about ethical leadership, and it's about setting a standard and encouraging their managers, their top managers, their senior managers, to comply with the framework and to submit their forms. Now, if we look at some kind of a breakdown, we are looking really at DGs here in this particular table over here. And as we know, at provincial level, there is one DG, the provincial DG, the DG of the province. So this does not include all the heads of department of the various departments that comprise the provincial administration. And we see that at a national level, out of 45 heads of department, 26 submitted on time, and 19 were outstanding by the due date of 31st of May 2012. In contrast, the provincial DGs, with the exception of the Northwest, were fully compliant, all made their submissions in time. And that brings us to a total of out of 54 directors general at national and provincial level, 34 were submitted in time and 20 were outstanding. Now, if we go into the actual departments, we see that in Gauteng, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and Western Cape, all HODs submitted their forms by the due date, and that is obviously to be commended and encouraged that we can maintain the standard. Nevertheless, there were a number of provincial departments whose heads did not submit by the due date. In Eastern Cape, Education and Health. In Free State, Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Economic Development, Tourism and Environmental Affairs, Education and Human Settlements. In KwaZulu-Natal, Community Safety and Liaison, Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs and Royal Household, and then Health. In the Northwest, across the board, we had a challenge there. agriculture, conservation, environmental and rural development, education, finance, human settlement, local government, traditional affairs, office of the premier, public works, social development, women, children, and people with disabilities, sports, arts, and culture. So that is the challenge in the Northwest. Now, we felt it would be useful, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, if we shared with you the work that we have begun on scrutiny. The statistics and information we will present is from the previous year, 10-11, because I've indicated we are currently busy with 100% scrutiny. Now, basically, scrutiny involves verifying the information which is contained in the forms. And this is of fundamental importance, because even if we're getting the forms in on time, even if we achieved 100% compliance rate, the question then becomes, what is inside those forms? Are the disclosures accurate? Are they honest? Now, basically what we do is we verify the information relating to directorships and partnerships on the CIPC database. That's the company register. And the nature of activities relating to consultancies, retainerships, the work performed by public servants outside, that's the senior management service, outside the public service, are used in order to formulate an opinion as to whether we have potential or actual conflicts of interest. And all of the activities that an SMS member is involved in are assessed against the official activities of the particular SMS members. We also consult the DEES registry database to verify whether a particular senior manager disclosed all his or her properties. And as we now do the 100% scrutiny, we are also looking at the departmental supplier databases as a further reference point and check, because that is where we're going to see actual conflicts of interest emerging. If an SMS member, whether they disclose or not a particular registrable interest, but if that interest appears on the department's supplier database, then surely we have a major problem. But in the scrutiny information that we will be presenting from the 2010-11 financial year, we checked against the company register, the CIPC database, as well as the deeds registry. Now, this is what we found based on the 30% sampling, and it was 30% of those who submitted on time. We have the national figures, and we have the various provincial figures as well. And what we see is that across the board, national and provincial, we have 30% of potential conflicts of interest, where we feel in terms of either what was disclosed or what was not disclosed, there is a potential conflict of interest in terms of the interests held by an official and the work that they do. And if we get into the correlation between official responsibilities and interests in a private company, we see that 20.8% across the board of senior management service members, public servants at the senior management service level, have a close correlation between their official responsibilities and their interests in a private company. And we also see that if we look at many companies, 4, 5, 6 companies, 18% of senior management service members have registrable interests in many companies. And it raises a number of ethical questions. And it has become very important for us also, as I've indicated, to now look at the departmental supplier databases. Because based on the patterns we've seen in the 30% sampling that we've done, these potential conflicts of interest that we're looking at could very well be actual conflicts of interest if those companies are actually on the department supplier database. And we hope in the coming months that we'll be in a position to share those results with Parliament. But I think what this talks to also is the ethics of, in South Africa today, where we have massive challenges around poverty, social inequality, and unemployment, where we have a restricted or limited national wealth pot. We have public servants who want to operate with different income streams in a context of national wealth scarcity, if one may put it that way, where they want to have a senior management service salary, which we believe is not a bad salary at all. Over the years, the salary of senior managers in the public service have been improved and strengthened. And yet, sizable numbers see it fit to pursue other interests as well, to double dip, to augment their salary. And that raises questions around the commitment of public servants to the work they are supposed to be doing. If we're saying that 18% overall of senior management service members have interests in many companies, are they able to give the necessary focus to their work that would allow them to deliver on the core objectives of government? That is the key question, and one of the key questions that emerges from this. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, we indicated that we still hope over time to strengthen the financial disclosure framework, and over the years the Public Service Commission has looked at examples from other countries in order to establish best practice in the management of financial disclosures and to ensure optimal functioning of the system. And we believe strongly that we need to entrench the management of conflicts of interest within the public service as a key strategy to fighting corruption. So we've been looking at how these things are managed by other countries, and we found, for example, in Mozambique, the forms of senior members are accessible to only a small select number of officials. There are arguments that there should be full transparency and that everyone in the country should be able to look at financial disclosures. And there are some countries where through various forms of legislation, promotion of access to information legislation in various countries where access can be obtained by members of the public to financial disclosures. In Botswana, which we know scores very high on various global indexes of governance and integrity, employee supervisors are involved in the disclosure process. It's an obligation to update records whenever a significant change occurs, and there's a disclosure of spousal and family members' information. And those are things that perhaps can be considered going forward, whether or not we want to have disclosure of spouses and family members as well as the individual senior management service member. And then the issue of updating records, because as we've explained, the submission happens once a year but it could be that 2 months after the submission has been made that a particular senior manager now gets involved in a registrable interest, and that is a significant change. So that is also an issue we would need to consider around electronic submissions, because it is possible with an electronic submission that one could say whenever there's a change it should be updated electronically. So these are the kinds of options that we can look at going forward. Disclosures are also managed in various Asian countries that we've looked at, including Vietnam, Thailand, Korea, and Sri Lanka. There's disclosure of movable assets in Vietnam, Thailand, and Korea. Cash loans, earned income, cash and debts must be disclosed in terms of the financial disclosure requirements in Korea and Thailand. Disclosure is submitted annually within 1 month after appointment. Filing is required upon change in assets. Sanctions and fines, salary degrading, scale degrading, demotion, fine, dismissal in Vietnam, Sri Lanka, and Korea. Obviously, these are all options that could be considered going forward to look at how to strengthen. So should we say, in terms of the lessons from Africa and Asia, that each time there's a change, there should be an immediate update in terms of the disclosure? And then what we're saying is if there's electronic submission, that would make that easier. These are some of the things that we can look at. But then obviously the sanctions in some of those East Asian countries would be things that we would need to look at going forward. They're quite strict. Those are obviously things that would require a lot of decision making, but salary degrading in those countries obviously sends a very clear message around conflicts of interest and corruption. So I think if we try and look at the various lessons, we could say that all public servants should disclose conflicts of interest as soon as they occur. That is a positive lesson that we can gain from those. All public servants should disclose spousal interests and those of their family members. That's another lesson that we've learned. Departments should adopt conflicts of interest policies at each department level. Cash loans, earned income, cash and debt should be disclosed. Registrable interest should be disclosed when there's a change in assets. Clear-cut sanctions and fines should be imposed on late and non-submission of financial disclosure forms. And there should be disclosure of financial interests upon leaving office as well. These are some of the lessons that have been learned that can be considered. Of course, the Public Service Commission is not the actual policy maker in this process, but based on the role we play in administering the system, we can make recommendations for the policymakers at the level of the executive to consider, and also for Parliament, in as much as Parliament does play a key and decisive role in influencing policy outcomes of the executive. Now, as we indicated, we thought it would be useful to contextualize this within the National Development Plan. The National Development Plan makes it very clear that South Africa should be relentlessly building a professional public service and a capable state. The National Development Plan talks about a capable developmental state with a high-quality professional public service as being critical to achieving the developmental outcomes which are articulated in the National Development Plan. The experience of other countries shows that we can't achieve this overnight, but over time we need to introduce measures that will strengthen the professional quality of the public service. And the National Development Plan identifies a number of areas, including stabilizing the political administrative interface, to ensure that we have a stable public service, that changes in the top level of the public service do not happen too frequently so that one can really bed down and deepen administration at the level of each and every department across the public service. There is an argument in the plan that the emphasis on political deployment should be replaced by a focus on building professionalism, a public service which is professional and serves government, but which is sufficiently autonomous to be insulated from political patronage. It also emphasizes the need to make sure that the public service and local government become careers of choice. And at the top, that recruitment and management should be based on experience and expertise, but at the same time, developing technical and specialized professional skills to ensure that the developmental outcomes which are articulated in the plan can be achieved with the public service as a key driver of those. For example, if we look at the infrastructure build program currently underway, those technical and specialist professional skills are very, very important. More important for the purposes of this presentation, the National Development Plan recommends that rules restricting the business interests of public servants can be made more specific and clear. So that's very clearly articulated in Chapter 14 of the plan. And just to indicate that we came to the National Assembly in November of 2012 and we made a presentation to the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration. And the Minister for the Public Service and Administration then facilitated an engagement between the Public Service Commission and Cabinet. And the Public Service Commission made a recommendation that public servants should be prohibited from doing business with government. Cabinet approved that recommendation, and as we've seen recently, the Minister for the Public Service Administration as well as the Minister of the National Planning Commission have both come out very strongly to articulate this position that public servants should be prohibited from doing business with government. The Minister for the Public Service and Administration is currently seized with the task of amending the Public Service Act. We have made our inputs and we are confident that the Minister will drive this process. There have in the past been questions raised around constitutionality of such a position, but we believe that it would be constitutional. If we look at the Bill of Rights, it says that every citizen has the right to choose their trade, occupation, or profession freely. The practice of a trade, occupation, or profession may be regulated by law. And we believe, and it is indeed a fact, that the Public Service Act is the legislation that regulates the general public service profession. And therefore, the Public Service Act can place those rules and restrictions on the business interests of public servants very clearly and specifically as required by the National Development Plan. Section 30 sets out some of these conditions and determines that no employee shall perform or engage himself or herself to perform remunerative work outside his or her employment, except with the written permission of the executive authority of the department. And we believe that this particular section can be amended to specify that public servants may not undertake business with various public service departments, local governments, organs of state, public entities. That would be a very legitimate restriction in terms of the requirements of the Bill of Rights. Chairperson and honorable members, in conclusion then, we should acknowledge that there has been a steady improvement in the submission rate. It's not at the 100% we want it to be, but the Public Service Commission has played a key role in putting the pressure on departments, and Parliament has played a very important role in supporting these recommendations of the Public Service Commission, which has seen an overall improvement in the submission rate. We are nevertheless concerned that in certain cases where we are not seeing the compliance we want, public servants, senior managers have submitted their financial disclosures by 30th of April, but executive authorities have delayed in submitting the forms to the Public Service Commission. And we have had support from the National Assembly in this particular area, both in terms of financial disclosures and in terms of the performance agreements of heads of department. Ultimately, it is the executive authority, the Minister of the MEC, who must ensure that the disclosure forms are submitted to the PSC in time. And that's why we believe very strongly that the National Assembly and provincial legislatures should monitor and ensure that executive authorities, ministers, and MECs comply with the framework. And in order to achieve this, Parliament and provincial legislatures must also assist the PSC by including in their monitoring mechanisms the aspect of requiring departments to report on actions that have been taken against transgressors. And where no action has been taken, reasons must be given for such omission. This is a very critical aspect. We do look at the forms, and increasingly this involves the scrutiny as well. But we do write to ministers and MECs raising issues around the submission of the financial disclosure forms, and we make recommendations. And we believe that Parliament can support the Public Service Commission in this endeavor to ensure that where there is non-compliance by particular officials, or where there is dishonesty, where there is incomplete disclosure, or whatever, that there should be a consequence. There should be a consequence. If there's no consequence, then situation of non-compliance will continue. But if there is a consequence, the sanctions, whether or not they're as strict as we saw in some of the East Asian countries, or whether they begin and the discipline is implemented progressively. So it could begin with warnings, written warnings, ultimately final written warnings, but there should be sanctions, there should be consequences if there is non-compliance. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, commissioners, colleagues, thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much for elaborate presentation. The core of which is fight against corruption. But one could see that there are still a lot of challenges to realize that. But let me facilitate and allow members to engage on the presentation. Honorable Gunda, Honorable Nancy, yeah, in that order, Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Chair. Now, Chair, let me first thank the PSC for coming to us today and brief us on what they are really doing and what's happening. Chair, I'll ask questions as they have presented unto us, but I'll mix them even. My first question, Chair, is it's an excellent document that what they are trying to do and all that. Chair, as I listen to the PSC, this act is on public servants, and they monitor public servants to do this and that. What about the ministers themselves, the politicians themselves, who also deal with government, also make business with government? Have you ever thought about that? The other question, Chair, let me check on page 7. My concern is, and I think it's their concern, how will you deal with this problem of the Northwest and the Free State? Is there any mechanisms that you try to put in place to solve that thing? And on page 9, I see you mentioned the 70 national departments, but you don't give us names which departments it is. and the 14 provincial departments. We would like to know. And then there's something on the same page, page 9. There's a disciplinary code and procedures as contained in the SMS handbook. Is it possible for us to see that handbook and read through it so that we can see what we can do? I think my colleagues will ask other questions, but I would like to ask the questions that our research has been done. The issues for consideration by the committee. I just need to ask you a few questions. What are the main reasons for the non-compliance for the framework and the powers the PSC has with regards to the disciplinary actions on non-compliance? Whether the financial interests of those persons who have disclosed were verified, and what was the level of accuracy of these verifications? What was the role of the Special Anti-Corruption Unit in the DPSA with regards to potential conflicts of interest cases? Has there been no offenders successfully prosecuted? If so, how many? Since the Northwest have 27% in the three provinces, okay, I've already asked the question to you. The non-submission of disclosure forms by 19 DGs at national departments are a serious concern. What action plans has been taken to remedy this situation, and what is the progress to date? The last one, Jay. Why is the financial disclosure framework not linked to the performance agreements of designated officials in order to ensure adequate compliance? I thank you, Jay.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think Olga has almost covered most of the things that I've been thinking about, but I think I need just emphasis on consequences. I mean, we are almost 20 years now after our freedom, and the levels of corruption are rising every now and again, and this document, I mean, it's clear and it's nice, but what I want us to talk about, I mean, to hear from them, the consequences, to me they are not clear, because I think this document is supposed to be accompanied with consequences. For instance, those who have not submitted, what does that, I mean, suggest to you? These are senior managers. So why are you not putting in consequences? And two, Chairperson, I wanted to make sure that I understand this point which Honorable Gunda was trying to raise here, about if you're talking about public service servants, I mean, are you excluding politicians in the process? If you're excluding them, why? And so that I can understand, because all these people are involved here. I think that's what I can just emphasize about those things Honorable Gunda has raised. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think many of the questions covered by the previous speaker. I just wanted to make a point in terms of the values and principles raised by a professor. I know that people do study public administration and they can't do the degrees or the diplomas, but when we start dealing with this issue, are we not dealing with it too late in the person's life when they get to that stage, when they enter into the career stream? But if it was part of your life, you grow up like that, it's a culture, it is a norm, it's a societal issue, I mean, then it's just part of someone's life, and then we want to try and correct it at a later stage when someone enter into the public service. So my question here, or this point I'm making, is it not that we must bring it back to education? You know, there are specific subjects we deal with in education that we perhaps have to deal with that at a younger age, making a point of when we have information sessions and skills and other information learners must know. I think that maybe the point must also be addressed at a much earlier stage and not wait till people enter into the public service. I, quite new here in Parliament, but I've noted the stats start in 2007, and I'm sure there was stats before 2007 from 1999 to 2007. But I do not want to answer that. I'm just making a comment. I would like to know the media reports that we occasionally read about. Is that because someone is speaking out of the department and giving information to the media, or is it because your office is open with the media about the status of affairs with conflict of interest within government service? Otherwise, how often do you yourself inform the public at large, you know, how the public money is spent and how much of this conflict of interest is existing and is referred to disciplinary processes and so on? So I just want to know if you yourself are doing that, or who's responsible for informing the public, the taxpayers. And then I want to agree with the performance contracts of employees, if it should be in there up front, not only senior management to sign the initial contracts and can be disciplined if they do not disclose or complete that forms. I think that's very important. I also want to know, is the 30% you refer to in the disclosure framework is the stats that you refer to on the slide that shows the 2011-12 financial year? In other words, that 5,206 out of the national department, if that is the 30% you are referring to. And it is obvious to me, if we look at Northwest in their poor performance, and later on when you say 48% I think is not submitted, or there's a conflict of interest in 48%, then once understand why they are not submitting, why they're not coming openly, because it appears that the people in they are involved themselves, or the departments are involved in these conflict of interest, and therefore there is no submittance, because it's clear that there's conflict of interest in that province. Honourable Chair, I think that's what I wanted to say for now. The last point is, you refer to the National Assembly and the provincial legislature when you make the conclusion about who should monitor, but you're not saying that what the NCOP should do, perhaps, and what is our role. You know, besides an oversight role, what is our role? And I think we must perhaps support the legislation that Cabinet has already adopted. I think we need to talk about that. Probably one of the areas that will come to us. But I think there's a strong point on all parties who govern, wherever they govern, whatever sphere of government, to look seriously at this political appointees that has been made in order to give our people work, and not necessarily appoint the people with the expertise and the experience at the top level of management to ensure there is no conflict of interest, or there is an efficient and effective service delivery with integrity, of course. I think that's ultimately what is important, trust and integrity, that the public service that we have must serve the people, and I think that is what is important. That's what the people want. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. You know, I think that my colleagues have raised a lot of these issues, but you, Chair, have started to say this is all to fight corruption, and I want to agree. You see, Chairperson, if we want to win this war, we must start from the top. We must not start from the bottom up. You see, when ministers, president, deputy ministers, and everybody is been left out in compliance, we will never win this war. We can have this very beautiful documents. But we must insist that each and everyone, it's not only DGs and whoever must and officials that must disclose. Because you see, I think it's the last slide that Honourable Dennis have just quoted now about the government and the legislatures. We must do oversight. But you see, some of our members in parliament are also being charged with some other people outside. Now, it's a big challenge to us. I'm making an example of one of the members of the NA there, charged with an MEC in the Northern Cape, being charged. Now, we must do oversight over these things to check if, but some of us are involved. Chairperson, I want to refer to compliance with the financial disclosure framework. It's 2, in brackets 2. The compliance rate by due date, that. Mr. Nessie have asked, what is the consequences of people not doing? You see, it's very important. We are sitting here, Chairperson, taxpayers' money. We must come, when they come next time, they must come and tell us that this will be the consequences. Or must we work it out? That's the question. Must we work it out as a committee? Because we can't have this type of meetings all the time and nothing is happening. Compliance, it's 3 now. Compliance with financial disclosure framework, it's 3 in brackets. You are seeing 17 national departments and 14 provincial departments in 3 provinces. My question will be, which 17 departments, can you tell us which 17 departments are these? And the 3 provinces. The minister have said on Sunday, let's name and shame them. We must not say and report to the committee 17 national departments and 14 provincial departments. Let's say which national departments, which provincial, 3 provincial departments. Chairperson, on the 2, the last bullet say there are some departments, both at national and provincial level, that did not submit a single financial disclosure from the form to the by due date 31st of May. We want to know who is this department. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Just before you can respond, just want to make sure mark comments to see what your powers are. You equal to public protector? Precisely because the impact of public protector's investigation is huge. But when you see the Public Service Commission also, your objective of what's supposed to be doing is very important, because you are trying to deal with the core of corruption. Because these are matters that affect the supply chain in the main, from all spheres of government, national, provincial, and local. These things are happening there. So I was just checking how far can you go? And if you can't go to that level, maybe the committee should make a very serious recommendation. The issue might be the constitutional constraint wherein the question says you are more close to NA than NCOP. And I think some of those things must be looked into. So a question of powers. The other issue that do you sometimes consider when you make reports, recommendations, because it's like your recommendations are not taken serious. Do you consider sometimes when you make a report, pass this information to the Hawks, to NPA, further investigation, especially where you have a strong suspicion of a person who doesn't comply. So that we are trying to fight this corruption at all levels. If you could do that. Yes, I the presentation, yes, it can do it, but my worry is that it's like you deal with the person that is working in the public administration, HOD, senior manager, teachers. They may create ghost companies. They may create people in the community, and they give them this work while it's the work of the HOD. How do you reset that? And they may not even take the money to the bank, where it can be suspiciously identified.
Yeah.
They have banks on the roofs,
yeah,
in their houses, there, up there. How do you, maybe if you have, there's this lifestyle thing, how far, because it can assist to say, can we take the machines that smell money and use it in this? It's a difficult exercise, but something needs to be done. Because now we are dealing with human beings who have got minds, who can plan. If they see that you go to their banks, whatever, they create banks at home. You just see by lifestyle to say, hey, this person, it's not the salaries that, you know. I think some of this, hence I was saying maybe a connection with MPA, Hawks, public front. You need the whole range of integrated approach. Alone it might not be possible. The other thing is, of course, the colleagues have raised it, the matter of politicians themselves. Of course, they are not public servants, but they are public representatives. How can they come in? The question of political deployment, which might be one of the core cause of non-submission or compliance, whatever, because you are protecting someone else. But that one, it might not be at that level. Maybe it needs the committee, not only the committee, political parties, to deal with this question of political deployment. But it must just be engaged on. Yeah, I think those are the few things I wanted to just comment on. But the most important thing is that this one might be a recommendation. I don't know to what extent it can engage in. There was one honorable member talked about performance measurement, whatever. But I was saying, why don't we include it in the employment contract? Not only performance. Employment contract must also capture that as part of my employment, this is what I'll be looked into. So that when we reinforce performance, we are able to apply consequences. I'm just throwing it to come to give them that possibility. Okay. Thank you very much. You can respond to members' questions.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I'll engage with the questions, and then the Commissioners and my colleague, Dr. Mampishwana, will fill in the gaps. Let's say that one of the key themes that comes out from the question is around the consequences. And then also linked to that is really raising questions around the PSC's mandate. Because essentially, discipline is a departmental matter. The PSC deals with grievances, employee grievances, it deals with complaints, but when it comes to discipline, it is a departmental matter. The issue then becomes the strength or enforceability of the recommendations of the Commission. And the National Development Plan says very clearly that the recommendations of the Public Service Commission must be strengthened. So the Public Service Commission is currently working on draft amendments to its founding legislation, the Public Service Commission Act, which would considerably strengthen the enforcement of its recommendations. Currently, the Commission may only issue directions in terms of the Constitution in respect of key personnel practices, which would include a recruitment, transfer, promotion, dismissal. But we are looking at whether, in respect of all the Constitution and values and principles, the Commission be empowered to issue directions. Because that is a critical question. Currently, in terms of the framework of the Constitution and the law, the Commission can make recommendations. We can write to an executive authority. We can say we've looked at these forms, and according to the information at hand, there has not been a full disclosure, or there's dishonest disclosure, there's potential conflict of interest. We would like the executive authority to look into this and to respond by a certain date. But if there's no response, there's nothing much that the Commission can currently really do. Because in any event, if we're going to compare with the public protector, the powers of the Commission are different with respect to the executive. The Commission can investigate practices which the executive, as the authority in HR, has done, but cannot investigate executive authorities per se. And hence, the need for us to partner with Parliament, in particular under the current constitutional and regulatory regime, in order to get the consequences. Because no matter what we recommend, ultimately those recommendations can be ignored. They may be taken seriously, and often they are. I wouldn't want to give you the impression that the recommendations are never taken seriously, but if they are not taken seriously, then there is a limitation. So I think that is an important point to make up front. Obviously, with the strengthening of our scrutiny, 100% scrutiny, and introducing the departmental supplier database, then the verification becomes much stronger. We're able to really verify whether the information submitted is accurate and honest. At this stage, and my colleague Dr. Mankishwana may add, to our knowledge, the anti-corruption unit in the DPSA has not been directly involved in this particular aspect of follow-up on financial disclosure. It's also important, I suppose, just to emphasize in terms of what I already said, that given the mandate of the Commission, even with the strengthening of the recommendations and the existence of other structures in Parliament, it would be unlikely that the Public Service Commission would be involved in the disclosures of politicians. The mandate of the Commission is not well suited to deal with that issue, and there are other structures and bodies in place in Parliament which would need to deal with that. There is additional information we can submit, but one can just run quickly through the compliance of the DGs by 31st of May 2012. The DG of Agriculture was on special leave and did not submit a form. The DG of Basic Education did not. The DG of Communications did not. The DG of Correctional Services did not. The DG of Defense did not. The DG of the IPID, the Independent Complaints Directorate, did not. The DG of International Relations did not. The DG of Labor did not. The DG of Military Veterans did not. The DG of Mineral Resources did not. The DG of the National, or the head of the National Prosecuting Authority, was on special leave at the time. The DG of Palama did not. The DG of Public Service and Administration did not. The DG of Rural Development did not. The DG of the South African Police Service, or the head, assumed duty after the due date, so was not required to. The DG of Sport and Recreation did not. The DG of State Security, acting DG actually, did not. DG Women, Children, Persons with Disability did not. So we can submit that information separately as well as other information pertaining to the details, greater details at the provincial level, if the committee would like us to do that. That's certainly something we can do in a separate submission, a written submission to the committee. It would be important, I think, as honourable members have pointed out, that if we're really going to get on top of the ethical and corruption issues, that we begin in the earlier years. So obviously, if one is looking at the broad picture, one needs to look at civic education and guidance going from the basic education level upwards. I think certainly that's an important point. As well as the issue of performance contracts and employment contracts. I think, obviously, the NCOP is, like the National Assembly, is uniquely placed to support the endeavor, and I think it's, for us, is to provide the information which the committee then can translate in terms of calling to account those who need to be called to account. We did emphasize that when it comes to consequences and calling to account, it is important to establish whether or not the senior manager submitted by the due date, because in some cases they don't, but in some cases the executive authority, the minister or the MEC, does not submit the forms to the PSC on time, and then that becomes a defaulter or a default department. So that is important to establish where the actual problem or the consequence should be. Okay, I think I would like to hand back to Commissioner Nkosi, and then I think there's other areas as well that Dr. Mampiswana can amplify on in terms of the specific questions that were raised.
Thank you, Chair. I will take some, just like the issue of Northwest. That province has been without a commissioner for the past 4 years, of which we think that the situation will improve because a commissioner has been appointed. He will be able to engage with the EAs in that province regarding the submission, because before the due date, she will be communicating with the EAs, and immediately after the due date, she will also be communicating with the EAs. What we do after scrutinizing the forms, I'm just having a simple because I was busy with this, we sent a letter to the EA and advising the EA to take disciplinary actions against the officials and also to meet with the officials to discuss so that the officials will say that it's a dormant company, I'm not engaged, I don't get financial benefits and all those things. But now it's up to the EA to engage with the officials. We do send the list of the names and we do tell the EA to say, come back to the Public Service Commission within 30 days to tell us what action has been taken. But most of the time, it's the EAs that are failing us. We are having a report that will be coming out, I think, in 2 months' time, where we are looking at actions taken by EAs. So once the report is tabled in Parliament, then you will also get hold of it so that we can see who is failing who, because we do write to EAs that they have to take actions against this officer. don't get responses from the EAs. So I think that report, it will be coming, I think, within 2 months, because we are towards the final stages of this. Then the committee, I think, will get some benefits there, because you will be seeing that who are the EAs that are failing us, so that we can see the consequences that we are looking at. The accuracy of the information, we go to the deeds registry to check the properties of the person. Once you punch the ID, then you get the properties registered under that official. That's where we get information. With CIPC, sometimes you find that the person will say, I've terminated my directorship in the company, but it has not been captured. But it is the role of the official to keep on checking with CIPC whether the directorship has been terminated. We use those systems, so we believe that the information that we get is accurate. And the information that we get, we also send it to the EAs. We prepare a schedule to say, this official did not disclose 1, 2, 3. According to the deeds registry, these are the properties registered under the official, and these are the companies according to CIPC. That's where we get the information that one will disclose 2 companies. Then when you go to CIPC, you get 13 companies, 10. That's what happened. So we said the EA has to engage with that official so that they can, if they say the person, they do come back to us to say that they've resigned this and that they give reasons. Then the other thing is the issue of the public protector and us. With us, we do a lot of investigation also. But we don't go public, because that's what the Public Service Act is not stating, that we have to go public like the public protector. Once we finalize an investigation, we give the report to the complainant and to the EA to implement our recommendation. So that's where the difference is, where you think that we are not doing anything because we are not out there in the media. It's because of the Public Service Act. That's why we are engaging with the Chief State Law Advisor to amend some of the things there, just like our recommendations, to be binding, so that once we have issued a recommendation, it has to be binding. So we are doing our work. It's just that because we deal with public servants and there's this Public Service Act that gives us direction which route to follow. I think the issue of the SMS handbook, the officials will just supply that to the honorable member, because it's available, I think, even in the website. Then I think where Commissioner will come in, where I've left some gaps also. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I just want to emphasize the collaboration between the Public Service Commission and the NA and COP. Maybe in a similar way as the AG operates, which is in Chapter 9, we are in Chapter 10, but there are similarities here and there. The AG will go out and audit the financial statements of each institution and then come and give assurance to Parliament that the finances are managed properly or not properly. And then Parliament, through committees, can then follow through those issues or findings that the AG came up with. I'm saying that with the Public Service Commission, we may follow the same route, because we are auditing the personnel practices, public administration practices in the that thing, and within the public administration, and then we come up with recommendations, we come up with findings whether human resources are used effectively and efficiently. Now, some of the reports that we come up with, there's very little that we can do on executive authorities in particular, because they have to responsibility. But the executive authority is accountable to Parliament. So we will bring in the evidence to Parliament, which Parliament can then hold the executive authority accountable on that information. So that's where the collaboration might come in. And when it comes to disclosure of politicians themselves, that's a separate law altogether, because there's a members, the ethics committee which monitors the executive authorities. If the executive authorities are the ones doing business with state, it is Parliament itself that must hold that executive accountable through the ethics committee and not through the Public Service Commission. But the long and short is that we provide evidence about disclosure and even actions that executive authorities present. So we can report that to Parliament, and then Parliament can make use of that report to follow through.
Is it full up?
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, honourable members and commissioners and colleagues. I think just two things that I thought perhaps we need to also bring to the attention of the Select Committee. First of all, on the issue of the awareness, I think it's the joint responsibility between the Public Service Commission and the DPSA, because I think we can be able to raise awareness, particularly around the importance of filing these forms on time. And I think we can amplify that going forward. But I think the point of the induction is also important. I think the honourable member, you spoke about the issue of education. So I think in light of the fact that we might not have a space for education much early in the education system of the country, but those who come into the public service require some induction. I think it is during that induction process where enough awareness should be raised about the expectation of anyone who joins public service, particularly around the professional behavior that all public servants should display, and around the issues of corruption. Because if we do so and we continue to do that, not only during the induction, but continuously when one is in the public service, we can be able to consolidate that particular awareness. I think you, Honorable Chairperson, you also spoke about the whole issue of the hawks. I think from the Public Service Commission, when we have investigated any particular case, and then there is amount of 100,000 rand involved, it is recommended that Public Service Commission will bring to the attention of the respective EAs, so that that particular EA can therefore report that case to the police. But the challenge here is we can bring that to the attention of the respective departments or to the EAs. It is the responsibility of the EAs to report that to the police. It is no longer within the space of the Public Service Commission. It is the department. We have recommended a number of these cases to the attention of the EAs. But I think we can even speak with confidence that we do not have a record where EAs have taken these cases to the police. So we do not have that. So it is again the responsibility perhaps of the Parliament to begin to really say to the EAs, when Public Service Commission has brought to the attention of yourself about these cases, what have you done? It will be the same point that Commissioner Nkosi spoke about in terms of the issue of where we have asked EAs of the actions they have taken against the officials that we have found wanting when it comes to the financial disclosure forms. But we still can speak with confidence that we have got no comprehensive records saying to us this is what the EAs have done. That's very, very problematic, and I think some work needs to be done by the Parliament in that regard. Perhaps I can just conclude by saying the DG and the Chairperson of the Public Service Commission, or the Public Service Commission, has presented on two occasions, one to the Portfolio Committee on Public Service Administration and to the Executive, where they were talking about key issues that have to be brought to the attention of both the EAs and the accounting officers. And we were very comprehensive on that. And the issue of corruption came very sharply as well, which I think still require a great deal of both the EAs and the accounting officers as heads of departments to play active role in this regard. We are putting together a number of documents which the Public Service Commission is of the view that when newly appointed EAs are in place, then there will be a manual that will assist them to understand what is expected of them, so that when they are appointed as part of the induction, SEAs, they will also be understanding some of those issues. In that document or manual, we're talking about the whole issue of financial disclosure form or framework, because it is EA's responsibility. We're talking about issues of performance agreements by heads of departments, and we're also talking about remunerative work outside the public service, because it is only the EAs who can either grant the permission or decline that permission when such a request has been made by the officials. That is, if the prohibition has not been finalized. But in the meantime, when the officials come or approach them with such a request, EA should be able to say, in light of the work that you do, in light of the amount of work that you will be doing outside the public service, which might take much of your energy and time in terms of focusing on the public service work, I decline. So we are putting that document as well, with the hope that it will assist the EAs in making some of the meaningful decisions in this regard. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bloom.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's very clear, Chairperson. I think that the responses have also assisted us to understand. They are saying that they don't have any powers to take action. Again, they are making recommendations. Now, my recommendation to the committee chair will be, it's a matter of a very important and urgent that we get that document and call these departments, us as the committee. If the National Assembly, I can hear that they have given the National Assembly everything. The National Assembly have done nothing. Now we, as a committee, must get those documents and call these departments and with their recommendations, because the recommendations is very important. We are going to follow it up. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, just one clarity. It seems like the PSC just talks about national and provincial and not about local government.
Yeah, thanks. In the Constitution, basically talks about the public service, which is provincial and national. And then local government is not included per se. But currently, we are amending the Act, because what the Constitution says, any additional powers or mandate must be through legislation. So we are amending the Public Service Commission Act to include local government, so that we can then start to investigate the public practices in local government.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thanks for the second round. I just want to confirm that your information that you provided was based on 30% of the stats. And for us, there is a concern if that information just reflects 30%. Where is the 70% that has even not been tested, and that you perhaps working on, but have not been presented to us to show the seriousness of the matter?
Thank you, Chair. It was because of human resource constraints. We did not have enough capacity to go for 100% scrutiny. But the 2011-2012 scrutiny, we have gone for 100% scrutiny. We are busy with it. We try to hire contract workers. But you would be getting the 100% scrutiny of all the departments. That's what we are striving for. So the report that will be coming will be covering 100%. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think of essence here is that you are an instrument that must support to assist Parliament to work beyond yourself. That's my understanding. I think in terms of the recommendation that members are making, we would request you to go and make a detailed report of recommendations you have made to me, so that the committee is able to take it from there, department by department, or at least level and at provincial level. That will assist, so that we're able to say, this recommendation we have done, what did you do as executive authority? If you could, on top of whatever is requested by members, just that one, you single it out, you make it very detailed, it will assist us to make our oversight work. I think this is the major conclusion that we should come around. And to thank the PSC very much for your work, and to confirm indeed that as Parliament we must use you. We need to use your information to do our work. But also there are certain areas where we need to review the law, so that you are strengthened. You are not just a recommender. Somehow you must assist to make sure that you contribute in solving the problem. That are those that are doable quickly. The law must be able to assist you to do those things. But that is not for you, it's for the Parliament to check those areas. As we meet, maybe also sometimes we need to have a meeting, bilateral meeting with NA committee, so that we move together. But as the NA has got its own strategies, we are coming with different strategies. We may confuse even the EAs. I think before we can even meet the EAs, I would recommend that we meet our counterpart and check the areas of convergence and move there. Let me thank also members of the media who are present, everyone who is present, and say, let's adjourn the meeting, because we can't stop meetings in Parliament. We adjourn until next time. Thank you very much. Thank you.